This is the Aspen Public Radio Newscast. I'm your host, Megan Tackett, here with your top stories this Friday. Aspen has completed the first phase of its initiative to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from buildings. The city has registered 173 buildings and is monitoring their utility data for their Building IQ program. As Aspen Public Radio's Michael Finelli reports, they want to identify areas of improvement.
The majority of Aspen's greenhouse gas emissions come from the built environment. So in 2022, City Council passed the Building IQ Ordinance for commercial and multifamily properties. Baker Casagrande managed the recent benchmarking process, which found that 3/4 of the tracked emissions came from burning natural gas. He says electrifying buildings in Aspen has an outsized climate impact.
Some communities, they want to reduce natural gas, but when they switch to electricity, that electricity's still dirty and they're just waiting for their electricity to get clean. For us, it's already clean. So any change you make now immediately has an impact.
Aspen buildings either run on Aspen Electric, which is entirely renewable, or Holy Cross, which has averaged 85% clean energy this year. Partnering with CORE, the Community Office for Resource Efficiency, the city plans to offer more than $200,000 next year to help fund those upgrades. For Aspen Public Radio News, I'm Michael Finelli.
The next phase of the program involves creating requirements for energy efficiency in buildings. In arts and culture news, the Aspen Historical Society's Decade by Decade exhibit will end next spring after being on display for 6 years. Aspen Public Radio's Reagan Mertz has more on the exhibit and what will replace it.
The Decade by Decade Aspen Revealed exhibit showcases a different decade in Aspen beginning in 1870 with the Utes and ending in 1970. The idea for the exhibit came after the Aspen Historical Society began looking at the city's census records.
And since that's such a kind of crazy looking census record.
That was Lisa Hancock, the Aspen Historical Society's head curator. She said that the census skyrocketed in the 1880s with the mining boom and sharply declined in the 1890s with the silver panic when Aspen's population declined by half. It then rose again with the rise of tourism and skiing in the mid-1900s.
We thought that'd be a good way to start telling the history of Aspen. Why does it look like this? How did this happen?
Artifacts like clothing and skis, as well as other historical documents like newspaper clippings, help tell the city's story. The next iteration of the exhibit will focus solely on the 1980s, a decade which celebrates Aspen's centennial year and is marked by a rise in luxury tourism, celebrity visitors, and infrastructure upgrades. For Aspen Public Radio, I'm Reagan Mertz.
In statewide news, Colorado immigrant rights activist Jeanette Vizquera was released from ICE detention on Monday after spending 9 months at the immigration detention facility in Aurora. The mother and grandmother was freed after a judge ruled Sunday that she could be released on a $5,000 bond. Speaking with KGNU at a celebration rally on Tuesday, she said she was relieved to be back with her community.
This is my town. This is my streets. This is the place and the I'm fight for, not only for me, for the other person. This is my community.
Vizquera first came to national attention during the first Trump administration, when she took sanctuary in a Denver church to avoid deportation. In 2017, Time magazine named her one of the most influential people of the year. Immigration and Customs Enforcement says it will continue efforts to deport Vizquera. Democrats plan to introduce a pair of bills during Colorado's upcoming legislative session aimed at increasing the state's housing supply. For the Colorado Capital News Alliance, Lucas Brady Woods reports they're setting up a familiar fight with local governments over housing policy.
One of the bills would make it easier for public schools and universities, local housing authorities, and certain nonprofit organizations to build residential units on their properties, whether or not the land is zoned for residential construction. It's based in part on a proposal that failed last year. The other bill would make it easier for homeowners to subdivide and sell off their land. State Representative Andrew Basenecker of Fort Collins is a lead sponsor of the proposals.
The state has a vested interest in trying to figure out ways to bring more housing to bear for the folks in our communities who are rightly asking for it.
But the Colorado Municipal League, which represents towns and cities at the state capitol, says the bills would amount to state overreach. The conflict between the state and local governments over control of land use rules has dominated housing policy at the legislature for years.
That was Lucas Brady Woods for the Colorado Capital News Alliance. A new study reveals rural areas in southern Colorado need more resources to prevent wildfires. KRCC's Brianna Heaney has more.
Huerfano, Archuleta, Conejos, and Las Animas counties face some of the highest wildfire risk in the state. But they don't have adequate resources, like funding, fire prevention treatments, and training. The study, published by Colorado State University, also found that while the Front Range had substantial risk factors, that region had relatively ample assets to meet those risks. The information could shine light on the need for increased wildfire protection for at-risk rural areas that currently receive less funding and resources. Brianna Heaney, KRCC News.
And in regional news, earlier this month, water users from around the Colorado River Basin gathered in Las Vegas to discuss the state of the river and the negotiations over how to allocate its water after 2026. Rocky Mountain Community Radio's Caroline Yanis has more.
Attendees say the mood at the conference was serious, as the seven states that use the river were no closer to an agreement than they were in November.
Pessimism and frustration are kind of the words of the day, I think.
That's Doug Kenny, the director of the Colorado River Research Group at CU Boulder. If the Upper Basin states of Colorado, Utah, Wyoming, and New Mexico can't reach an agreement with the Lower Basin states of Arizona, California, and Nevada, the federal government could step in and create an operating plan for them.
35 years of studying the Colorado River, this is the first time in my life there's a lot of people I talk to who would welcome the federal government stepping into this issue.
But Kenny says that could be problematic because the Trump administration has been cutting staff and budgets at the agencies that manage the river and its reservoirs, like the Bureau of Reclamation. Caroline Yanez, Rocky Mountain Community Radio.
The states have until Valentine's Day, February 14th, to submit their own plan to the Department of the Interior. Over 2 million children across the country are being raised by relatives or close family friends. The Mountain West News Bureau's Daniel Spalding has more on a new report highlighting the challenges facing these kinship families, which are more common within Indigenous communities.
According to the U.S. Government of Accountability Office, or GAO, these households are more likely to experience poverty and mental health issues. Kinship families are common in Mountain West states with high Indigenous populations like New Mexico and Arizona. Kathy Laren at GAO says kin caregiving is an important part of tribal culture, but because many Indigenous caregivers are outside the formal foster care system, they often receive less financial support.
One of the biggest challenges that we heard across the board for grandparents and other relatives that are raising, you know, their relative children is just the financial burden of it.
Laren says states could adopt standards and programs designed to better support kinship families. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Daniel Spalding.
The Aspen Public Radio Newscast is produced by our team. News Director Hallie Zander, reporters Reagan Mertz, Sarah Torrey, Michael Finelli, and me, your host, Megan Tackett. Our contributing reporters include Eleanor Bennett, Josie Taris, and Lucy Peterson. You can listen to the show every weekday morning on our website or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.